Welcome to The Learning Link, CDRCP's professional learning podcast, where educators, parents, and community leaders explore innovative practices, inspiring stories, and the latest insights in child development and early learning. Our goal is to connect you with the knowledge and tools you need to make a lasting impact on the lives of children and families.
Hello, and welcome back to CDRCP's professional learning podcast, The Learning Link. I'm Bibi, and I'm your host this week as we reimagine what professional learning looks like. Before we dive in, we want to let you know that you can find more professional learning opportunities like this on our professional learning page on our website and follow us at CDRCP on all of our social media platforms. And if you're a fan of our show, please do remember to like and comment your reflections on whatever platform you're listening in on. For today, I'm joined with Rosalba, who is a pedagogist, consultant, and owner of Acorn Collaborative. She is also a big advocate for continuous professional learning and an avid advocate for rethinking about educational practices. Welcome to The Learning Link, Rosalba. Now, I know that you've been part of CDRCP as a presenter for professional learning sessions for a number of years, and you also have a mini book series, but I'll let you talk more about that as well. And you are also the owner of Acorn Studio. So for our listeners, make sure you check out Acorn Collaborative website and all of the amazing things that Rosalba is doing. So I'm going to hand the mic over to you and let you introduce yourself to our listeners and a little bit more about what you do.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Bibi, and thank you, CDRCP, for having me on this podcast. A little bit of a shift from presenting in person and with webinars. So I'll just kind of introduce myself for those of you out there that don't know who I am. As Bibi said, I have been doing webinars and workshop sessions for your region. I come in as a pedagogist and an educator with about 30 years of experience in early childhood and pedagogical research. And I began my career as an educator in kindergarten in the school program. I'm also the former owner of a private nursery school that was also a learning hub studio space for educators that was called Acorn School. And really the place was a place for advocating for children's rights and also educators' rights. And we really shared an expertise around pedagogical thinking and held quite a bit of study groups during that time. And then in 2015, we did close our doors to the school, but we remained open as the Acorn Studio or Acorn Collaborative, as you see, which continues to really embrace that professional learning, developing conversations, collaborating with others, webinars and modules that we continue to do, podcasts, which is something we've been doing now for a couple of years, and really thinking about spaces as places to think with not only educators, but with artists and chefs and families and children. I'm really passionate about this engagement with educators and thinking pedagogically, and really am passionate about, for those of you who follow me on social media, about the shift of culture in consumption of food. So I do a big research and talk about the pedagogy of food and promoting that sort of sustainability. So one of the mini books that I'll talk about a little bit later in this conversation is the Pedagogy of Food book. So I'm also one of the contributing authors to Beautiful Stuff from Nature, written by Leila Gandini and Kathy Wiseman-Topol. There is a few other writings in the process of other books that I'm doing with some colleagues. But, you know, I think as we talk here this morning, we'll develop some more questions or I'll give you some more insight about that as well. So thank you again.
Absolutely. And I think that's a good intro for people who are interested in your work to kind of dabble in to take a peek of what you're doing and more to come. So I'm excited.
Great.
So for our third episode for The Learning Link, We had G, who's a quality initiative mentor with CDRCP, talk a little bit about what professional learning is and how the Raising the Bar program in Peel supports professional learning. With that said, Rosalba, when you think of professional learning as an early years professional, what immediately comes to mind?
Oh, there's a lot of things that come to mind, but what I think about in professional learning is it's a real continuous process of research, staying current, but it's also equally about understand the histories and stories of our profession, of education, of early childhood education, and so forth. I also think about professional learning as this way of life, of learning from each other and how we can live well together. So this perspective that I think about leads to this idea of the pedagogy of listening, which is something that I really have adopted from Carlina Rinaldi. And what she says is listening is not a mere technique. It is a way of being with others that reveals a perspective on the world. So I take this really into consideration when we're thinking about professionalism. And it's not just this tool that we're looking for, but it also helps us build a sense of well-being, wellness, expression, and so forth. So when we feel sort of secure in these ways or these areas, and I mean everyone, educators and children and so forth, we can really effectively engage with each other and overcome like challenges or even understand how to face these challenges. It also comes with a responsibility about listening to what our histories and our stories are and what we've inherited and what do we do with all of that. So professional learning to me is a real collaborative approach and it reaches out in many different ways. And I think working alongside others and colleagues, having these opportunities like podcasts and other ways of coming together is really important. And I just feel like if we can continue in these ways, I think it's wonderful. So.
It's interesting. You talked about the idea of it being continuous and enhancing our daily lives. When it's funny because when I was writing these questions, I was thinking about a way of how I would answer them. And for me, like when I think back of when I was doing my diploma in early childhood education, I remember there it was so like every class they talked about and enhancing your professional learning and the importance of it and so forth. And I think at that time I didn't really understand the importance of it and the impact that it would have on what I do as an educator and even in my personal life. I think being in the field for so long now, I see the importance of it and the value of it. And like you said, it's the idea of as an educator to be intentional and being responsive and keeping up to date with the research and so forth that's happening, right? When it comes to the early years. But I think of it when I look at some of the professional learning that I've taken, and you talked about the quote that you shared about listening. I remember I did a workshop where they talked about the art of listening. And even just those little things that I can take from not only that I do in my professional life, but it kind of transcends into what I do personally, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So for me, when I think of professional learning, I think of it as a wholesome things that I can do, I can take and transcend that learning into my personal life and my daily life, right? Which
Absolutely.
I think brings me to my other question. You talked about being in the field for over 30 years. I would like to hear your thoughts on why professional learning is so important.
So when we say this intentionality of professional learning, I think about shifting even the word professional, right? To thinking about what you just mentioned is this everyday kind of living. And I think that over time, this is what I really start to think about with professional learning, I guess. That listening comes in all the time somehow. And I go back to the days of Acorn School. And I think when we were looking to start this school, we wanted to focus on something different. different in the way that we could look at school and education and children with this view of all of the things that we talk about, feeling good when you walk into these spaces, right? We had annual visits from Leila Gandini, who really challenged us to question our listening and our observations with children, and to really have a goal to look forward to what it means to make a child's learning visible. And we know that's very difficult to translate that, because you can't really get inside someone's mind to really depict that, but you are constantly translating it, or interpreting, I should say, and these are the things that we were constantly being challenged with. We think about our school back, thinking about Acorn, is that it required a lot of building a trust and a relationship and a responsibility with each other. And also, we really focused on the idea of care and going beyond care and creating a place to really slow down, to look at each other and our stories that, come with us. So these were great examples of how we really started this sort of path to rethinking school or childcare or early learning. And so one of the great examples, and I think one of the things that we were well known for and still continue to be well known for, is our annual tomato sauce project that we did with the community. And this was a project. It wasn't really just to come together to make sauce, really, but it was a way to build community and to really take into that idea of, yes, we were talking about that whole atelier of taste, as I talk about in one of the mini books, but we spoke to the idea of what does it mean to eat well together. And it was more than nourishing our bodies for, nutrition. It was to nourish our souls and our minds, and to really think about how do we work together and how do we build this sort of community of school. So we refer to it as setting the table. So it took responsibility of all of us, including the children. So being the children are part of the program continuously, are part of the research. And this is one of the reasons why, going back to something Carlina Rinaldi said, or even Layla, is like listening to those children is really important, because they do bring that. And I think it takes, I say, I'm always learning something new. 30 years doesn't mean I know it all, but I'm always learning something new. And it's really amazing to see what is always continuously happening. So when we closed the school in 2015, we really continued with the studio and the Acorn Collaborative, and we continued to work with educators in this way of really listening in a very profound way of thinking, and thinking about pedagogies, thinking about the pedagogy of care, but sort of shifting that word care to be more about that responsibility that we all have, and including children. So we talked more than, what do the spaces look like, or what are materials about. We really took that intentionality and really sort of dug a little deeper each time, focusing on who is the educator, who is the child, and so forth. And I think that is part of why that idea of professional learning is so extremely important. But it's also, like you said in the beginning, it's a way of living. And I think that is what happened, is that we really are immersed in this because we really truly believe in this way of, learning, that it becomes part of who you are in your everyday life. You start thinking, you start, I used to say things like, oh, I think about my own environment in my home, is that I start rethinking about how certain things are positioned because of how we use it. So it really takes on this real careful way of listening and observing. And I think this is why it's been, 10 years that the school's been closed, but we've been developing these series of mini books, and I have 11 titles that depict certain parts that we really worked on in the school. So, from the pedagogy of taste and food to, lights, using light or using graphic tools or using clay. These are all different separate books that we really dive into. But again, these books are not meant to how-tos. They're meant to share our own experiences with the hopes that it brings something out in the, the educator or the whoever is reading these books.
And there's actually a quote on your website that I made a note of for your mini books. You
Okay.
said that they're not answers, but invitations to slow down, notice, and engage in ever unfolding dialogue of education. And I think that ties in perfectly to what we talked about. Professional learning being part of our daily lives, like we're always learning, like you said 30 years in the field, you're still ever learning and things are ever changing. So I think for me, when I think of the idea of the importance, I think it's also essential that we understand why we do what we do, the intention, like you said,
Yes.
and know that we, even though we do have a professional responsibility, especially outlined by the College of EC, we do have a responsibility first and foremost. We have a responsibility to the communities and the children and the families that we take care of. And when you think of enhancing your learning, that's a big part of it, right? Like we
Right.
can't be
Yeah.
stuck in one regime of the ways of thinking, like you said. We
No.
have to think about things that are ever unfolding and the way that how we can use this information to be able to enhance the quality care or enhance the environment, like you said, things that we do in our spaces as well, right?
And I just want to add to that too. Our children are constantly changing too. So we need to be shifting and changing with that. So for us to stay stagnant in one place, it doesn't make any kind of sense and it doesn't do justice to anyone. So even with, we have to follow or we have to, I always like to go beyond the lines of following those sort of rules, but the outlines that are stated by the college or anything, those are outlines. It doesn't mean you need to fit within that. You have to go beyond, and that's all up to you. And this is why each program or each, center, school, classroom, anything, each educate it's they're different, and they shouldn't be cookie cutters, right? Because that's not, my community is way different than your community, and your community is way different than any other community. So they can't be the same. Maybe we share similarities, and that's the beauty of collaborating, right? And listening, because wow, when you hear someone else's other's perspective, you've never really thought of that before, or that, and it gives you another insight, right? It's that always digging deeper, and I think that's very important to acknowledge when we move when we are talking about this way of professional learning and so forth.
I want to touch a little bit on what you said about talking it out with each other and collaborating. I think of when we do these in-person professional learning sessions at CDRCP, how it's great to see the conversations happening across the tables with people that have never met before and ideas bouncing off of each other, right? And I
Right.
think that's where the key collaboration piece comes in because we're always able to learn from each other because I might have a situation happen in a
Yeah.
center that you've dealt with. So I'm getting support in ways that different ways of thinking, like you said, right? Which brings me to my other question. If you can think about a moment where professional learning has changed your own practice or even your perspective, and I know you talked a little bit about this.
Well, I think one of the most significant moments for me, and I tell this story often, starting off as a school teacher in kindergarten in the school board many years ago, say a long time ago, I was taken, I had the opportunity to visit the schools in Reggio. This is going back in the early 90s when, Reggio wasn't really heard of in here. It was in Northam, it was in the US, and I read an article and I had the opportunity to go, and honestly, the chaotic mix of what I felt when I was there was beyond, because there was confusion, but there was joy. There was wonder, but there was, uncertainty. And so I think this really lit up something for me to say, well, what are we doing? You know, what is this that they do and talk about, and how is this way of being with each other so interesting and so intriguing? And so that was the beginning of many other stories that happened after that. And then I, you know, when I was there in the I guess early 90s, it was we were supposed to listen to a session with Loris Malaguzzi, but he had died suddenly. So the trip still went on, but I didn't get the opportunity, and I didn't really know too much about him. But now, I mean, the profound way that he's left in what I read, and not only what I read that he's written, but all the other philosophers and educators and theorists that he followed, you know, I'm reading them, and it's really, really has this woke kind of thing. I guess that's maybe a word that we could use. And it's something that is not new. It is something from our old, or and we this is why it was so impactful. But you know, and I think that's what led me to leave the school board and to work at the lab school and at the college teaching part-time, because I was given that opportunity to share those new researches with the college. So it was teaching in these ways, which was very difficult at first. But, you know, even practicing this in the lab school in a kindergarten classroom was so exciting for me because it was all new and I was getting to do all of this. And it was really amazing. And that led me to opening Acorn and so forth. And full circle around, I'm back teaching at the faculty part time, which is over 20 years not teaching there, but I'm back teaching about the arts and also about the pedagogy of care. And so I'm really excited about that because so much has shifted and changed over the years. And you see the importance of that happening, right? Because if everything stayed the way it was, honestly, it wouldn't be any good to anyone. And so I'm excited to meet students who will bring knowledge. And this is what I think of even when we work with children. They bring knowledge and stories and histories and perspectives to our classrooms. It's how we engage and listen to that that really s starts to, we talk about those four foundations. Well, you know, how do we feel well together, and how do we, you know, have a way of expression and so forth. You don't feel well in a place that you work with or so forth. How can you move in these ways? It's you have to feel a place in a place where not only are you building relationships, but you're building trust and respect and care, right? And what does that all look like? And care is not just like, you know, broad. And we're, I mean, that's a another discussion for another day, but it's not like, you know, just an emotional kind of like carry, but it's more, it's about what do we do to really fulfill what is education and who is the child and so forth. So I think we really need to think about that, and because we all come with a different view of the child. So, because we've all had different experiences, right? So, we have to bring this together and have these kind of conversations. We've inherited also ways of thinking about children and acting with children. So, now what do we do with this, right? So, I think that's what's sort of shifting, and how I'm continuously thinking about changing, or well, not even just changing, but you know, shifting in these practices. And I think that's important. So it's not only to talk to people, but it's to engage and to listen and to also reciprocate some kind of conversation or collaboration as well.
And I think it's important to know we have these new learnings and we've learned something new, but what are we going to do with it, right? How do we put it into our practice? Or coming back to how do we apply it to our everyday lives? And you talked a
Exactly.
lot about the children taking the lead in the classroom. How are you going to implement these practices to be able to allow the children to take the lead in the classroom?
Well, you know, having the children take a lead, it has to not start like there has to be a way that we don't just give them the lead right away either, right? They have to feel listened to. right? They have to feel well, that they're able to live in this space freely and to share their opinions and so forth. But we have to give them something first. They have to feel some kind of security first. And this is one of the mistakes about people who say, well, I let the children do whatever they want or whatever their interests are. Well, it's more than that. And that, again, is for another conversation, but it's more than that. It's really about bringing something to them as well. And so this is why we come together, or we are about listening to each other, but it's also, we need to come with what we know or what our perspectives are and be ready to make a change or to face some kind of challenge. And it's not always happy every day. And that is part of life, right? Like we can't be happy every day. We run into certain things, but if we know how to deal with this in ways that can help us through, or even children, then it's better. It's better to be doing that, right?
I agree 100%.
Yeah. I mean, we can't take stress away. We can't take sadness away.
Those things are out of our control. It's about what
Yeah.
we do with it, right?
Yeah.
So here's my other question. If you were to reimagine what professional learning looks like, what would that be?
Oh, there's lots of things. There's so many. I mean, this is something I'm constantly thinking with all the time, when because I work with so many educators often, and I ask them, what do you want? And they, as much as they love the interactive, the hands-on, even in our studio at Acorn, there's so much hands-on, and it's smaller group sessions, right? Because you can have intimate conversations and also working with materials in the studio. But also with professional learning is like, moving away from our traditional kind of passive presentation type, but more instead focusing again on these active ways of engaging, and collaborating. Sometimes PowerPoints are good to show photos more, and I like to show that because we have so many photos from Acorn, and I feel educators really like to, is again, this is my response, or my that I get or feedback from the educators of what they want, and they like to look at photos, they like to look at the live studio happening if we're on webinars. But the photos and PowerPoints are just part of it, right? They're not like, oh, this is how you can have a material, this is how you can design a classroom or sort of, but it's really to
Exactly.
have these sort of structural conversational kind of groups to happen. I work with many pedagogical leads from different communities that these are the kinds of things we do, is that we meet online or we meet in person, and these are the kinds of things that we engage with. And there's always, as a pedagogist, I come in with a series of really thought-provoking prompts or listening, but also to disrupt a bit, because I'm trying to shift that for that listening idea. But I also see this way of, and this happens sometimes, I guess. But I haven't worked with too many educators lately on this, but we used to do this at Acorn, is where we used to have sort of educators spending time in other classrooms, observing, documenting, listening, co-teaching in a class that they haven't been in before. And it provides a lot of not only hands-on learning, but a lot of new perspectives, or different, something that you wouldn't imagine. So we used to do these kinds of study groups at Acorn, where we had study weeks, and we'd have different educators come in to just basically be in a classroom with us. Something more, I guess, thinking with is these inquiry kind of inquiry walks, where we could see groups of educators, and this is something that I do, where we can visit different learning environments or different environments and have specific questions to walk through these environments for these educators to engage in this listening, the children's theories, to use How does this classroom use light and shadow, for example? So that's something that's a little bit more structured, but it's sort of like a group. There's so many ways. I mean, I'm always thinking of interacting somehow. I mean, as much as we like to work, or educators like to work with interacting with materials, I really am particular about interacting with materials, because I say, materials have to be thought of very intentionally. We don't want to overload these classrooms with just anything. One of the things I do when I go into classrooms and work with teachers is to ask them, tell me more about why you chose the materials that are on your shelf. And a lot of times they don't even, they, well, we
No.
just have a variety of materials. I'm like, okay, well, this is what we need to work on, because we can fill our shelves with dollar store, and I'm not meaning to point out the dollar store, because I'm just saying, using one of many examples, we could fill them, but the children are, how are they using them? Is this inquiry walk that we do through classrooms? It's a material that could work with them. So I like to think more about the spaces and that intentionality of the spaces, of the way we arrange certain furniture materials, and to really slow down with that. And I think that's a big deal right now, because we have social media, and many educators, and I know, because when I go and talk, we're like, oh, well, we saw this on Pinterest, or we saw this on social media. I'm like, but does that work for you right now? Like, maybe it does give you some inspiration, but how will you take pieces of that to work with the children that you're working with, right? So, yeah.
And I think you touched on a couple of points as well too. That I myself are thinking about. So when I think of what it would look like, I think, and you touched on the various avenues such as having an educator come into a classroom or having photos on a PowerPoint. For me, it would be making professional learning opportunities more accessible for educators. And I know CDRCP right now is gearing towards that. We do have our podcast, which is fairly new. So appealing to our listeners who are more auditory. And then we do, I know with the Raising the Bar portfolio as well for the cycle, they have the mentors are looking to have the educators have their professional learnings, whether it be journaling. And we talked a little bit about this in our previous podcast with the Quality Initiative Mentor. For me, if I were to reimagine what professional learning looked like, I think of the word equity for some reason, just ensuring that we're able to meet everyone where they're at and providing various tools that, would appease to the needs of everyone. I think that's the best way that I can sum up what I would reimagine professional learning to be.
Yeah, and I think this is why, when you think of equity, these are the things that we're going with, podcasts, live webinars, in person, hands-on, photos, like all of these things, whatever is, and to make it accessible, for sure. And so that, to me, is why we have to just stay on top of it, almost, right? And be listening as well to those educators who are asking for these particulars, right?
All right. So as we conclude, what advice would you offer to our listeners about enhancing their professional learning?
Well, one thing that I talk a lot about is that idea to slow down. I know it's one of the things that I continuously work on. Yeah, the learning, the professional learning, the program plan, or so forth, isn't this race that we're looking for. It's a place to really process a deep engagement, and I think that's very important. And I think the word slowing down is becoming more and more present in our field. And I say, seek out conversations that push you to think differently. That's something that I like to do consistently. And that means looking for colleagues or educators who are willing to engage in these sort of honest and challenging dialogues. I also say the word constructive criticism, which is something we think of the word criticism as something negative, but that constructive way of thinking together, or listening to someone give you their honest kind of, not even opinion, but perspective or challenge, If you have a relationship already with these people of trust and respect, you will honor what they're saying and move with this somehow. And I think that's really important because sometimes we don't accept those criticisms very well, but those criticisms can are places where we hold care, right? My good friend and colleague Diane Cashin, who, she has been, my mentor. Not even beyond being a mentor. I mean, she's family. How that was so profound in our relationship was that we were very critical thinkers together, and we really challenged ourselves in great discussions and arguments, right? I mean, I really miss that deeply about her, but I move with this, and so this is why I want to share that with others, right? And I think, wow, that the most significant learning happens when you are really unsure about something, right? And to really sit with it and sit with maybe that difficult question or challenge, and what do you do with that? And then, I think finally, just remember that the most valuable learning really often happens in those simplest moments, right? And those really something that you observed happening with the child or children, and you're like, whoa, what just happened here? Listening to a child's story, a child's comment, a child's perspective, or their observation. We have to really remember that the children are our co-researchers together, right? We do bring knowledge, but we talk about not only research, but investigations with children. And what does that look like? So we really want to embrace how we, what we do with children's perspectives or their observations, and understand that they really are a partner in education. They're not just people that we are really, teaching to or giving them so much opportunities. They come with knowledge, even taking the time to self-reflect, right? We talk about that a lot, but what does that look like? What does that mean to self-reflect? And I think that's a big one too at times. If you have the opportunity to go to the website, there is different things happening at acorncollaborative.com and on my social media feed. I am working on two other things. One is co-authoring a book about the pedagogy of food. So that's not really the title, but it's something in the work in process. And I'm back teaching at the college, so that's really interesting and is going to be, I'm sure we're going to share a lot of stories there. And then also the mini books, right, that people can access or email me. That's probably the best way, or contact me somehow about the books. But that's, yeah, that there's just a lot of little things happening. But I'm always happy to do these podcasts. I do a series of different kinds of podcasts that are out there. I haven't really listed them on my website because, but I should have like links to them. But you can find different podcasts that I've done for different communities on
Perfect.
out there. Yeah.
Think
But
that sums it up beautifully.
yeah.
I wanted to thank you for joining us. Okay, so that's all the time that we have for today.
Great.
Today we explored what professional learning looks like in the earlier sector and helping us reimagine what professional learning looks like. Thank you once again for joining me, Rosalba. And for our listeners, thank you for listening and connect with us on CDRCP and all our social media platforms. And like Rosalba said, for more of her amazing work, please visit her website at acorncollaborative.com. And CDRCP also has one of her pre-recorded webinars titled From Observation to Intention, Listening and Reflecting to Create Infant Toddler Program on her CDRCP website under the On Demand webinar tab. And I would love for you to tell a colleague or a friend about this podcast and reimagining what professional learning looked like. To end things off, remember, professional learning shouldn't be something we endure. It should be something that energizes, challenges, and sustains us. Until next time, take care, everyone.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. We hope today's conversation sparked new perspectives and deepened your professional learning. To extend your learning, reflect on your thoughts using the Professional Learning Reflection Form, available on our website at cdrcp.com, or if you're a Raising the Bar in Peel member, you can find it directly in your user guide. Reflective practice is a powerful tool for growth, and we encourage you to take a few moments to think critically about what you've listened to today. If you found this episode helpful, share it with your colleagues. Creating a space for shared reflection supports stronger, more connected learning communities. We hope you will join us again on the next episode of the Learning Link Podcast.